In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. So happy, listening audience, for you to be here with us tonight. So we have a wonderful show for you tonight with our guest, Dr. Chell Torre-Hovic. And I'll be telling you more about him in a moment. First of all, again, as always, just thank you so much for all of your emails, your wonderful comments, suggestions for guests on the show. We're really here to help serve you, you know, with a goal of really igniting your best life. So that is the Spark's mission, to really truly put as much love and healing into the world as possible. If you're wanting to find out more about working with me, if you'd like to join me for some transformational life coaching, find out about speaking events and events that are happening online and retreats happening, go to stephaniejames.world. And there's an offering there for a free 20-minute coaching session where we can explore your dreams and goals. And also, please sign up for the free meditation visualization, Igniting the Spark Within. So we're here with Dr. Chell Torre-Hovic, and he is a neuropsychologist with a PhD in developmental psychology. He is coming to us from Norway. It's so exciting to be visiting with him tonight. I guess, is it tonight there?
It's night time. It's 9 p.m.
Okay, it's 9 p.m. night there, and it's 1 o'clock here in Colorado. So Dr. Hovic is also, he works at the local hospital there. He has got a private practice and is an associate professor at the local university. And I'm just so excited to learn more about his book, When Crisis Strikes, 5 Steps to Heal Your Brain, Body, and Life from Chronic Stress. My gosh, something that we all need. Welcome, Dr. Hovic.
Thank you.
So great to have you on the show. So I know that, boy, a lot of people that come into my office as a private practitioner have had an amazing amount of chronic stress. If they didn't have it before COVID, they sure as heck have it now. Tell us about, first of all, tell us about stress in the brain and what are long-term effects of stress on our brains?
Well, there's a lot of ways of describing it. I usually just kind of describe it in the sense to get an idea of it is that if you know, stress is an activation. Something's amiss, something's wrong, something's difficult. There's different degrees. Sometimes it's just the complications. Other times it could be very traumatic. It's a question of and also people will deal with it and take and react to it in different ways. But essentially, it's an activation, brain activation. I won't go through the whole sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system, but the body responds and increases activation, which means that you're prepared to do something quickly, right? The body prepares to do something quickly. And of course, it's a necessary reaction. It's important. It means that we've, you know, survived through the years through all kinds of difficult situations. And yet, the problem is that very much in our modern lives, a lot of these crises or difficulties, they last a long time. So that activation is not just for the moment, for that bear or that tiger that's attacking. It's you know, if it's a relationship crisis, if there's somebody in the family who's seriously ill or even passes away, as many have experienced during COVID, these types of issues, there can be family crisis. These things often tend to last quite a long time, and increased activation over a long period of time in the brain is going to wear it down, essentially. It's just like, you know, I often say, if you lift up a remote control, it's not a problem. You can just turn on or turn off the TV. But if you hold your arm up and hold that for several hours, it's gonna wear you down, right? So it's important to think about how one deals with these difficult situations, and especially these serious crises, so that the brain doesn't just get completely exhausted. Very often what we do when that happens is that we choose kind of strategies maybe that aren't always as favorable for our health, right? We might start to drink a little more. We might start to work a little more, avoiding the problems, and all these different avoidance strategies that then complicate and will then make those stress injuries essentially even worse over time. So Amanda, it's the book is about, you know, how to kind of balance your life in the face of a crisis and getting through it in a good way and maybe even growing from it.
Beautiful. I love that. You know, how does someone know that they are actually in chronic stress? You know, what are the symptoms that someone might look for that differentiate it from just everyday stressors?
Yeah. Well, there's people do tend to react a bit differently, but kind of classic signs of it are problems kind of concentrating, right? Problems maybe remembering things, constantly doing things that you haven't really done before, or not functioning in the way that you've been able to function before, right? Not able to complete tasks, not able to kind of initiate tasks, not planning, organizing properly. These kind of everyday routines that have been so automatic before, they start to become difficult or even maybe not even happening. And you're feeling that you just need to, you know, relax, you just need to lay down, you're feeling that you're not getting things done. Maybe problems are happening, you know, in relationships, there might be difficulties in terms of work and work performance and these types of everyday activities. So there's a change, somehow a change in those everyday routines that usually are kind of a marker that something's amiss.
That makes sense. So it's all of a sudden we're feeling overwhelmed, and you know, something that might have been not a big deal for us almost, you know, sounds like all of a sudden it sounds like a mountain, and it's almost unbearable. Something that was very simplistic maybe or not a big deal before.
Exactly. Yeah. And you, in my day job at the hospital, I work with people with very serious conditions such as psychosis or even schizophrenia. And any type of psychological condition or psychic difficulty is going to be exacerbated or worsened with stress, right? So one of the first things that we do with all of the groups that we treat you know, is to try to get control over the stressors in their lives and see how we can get control of them and reduce that, because that's always going to alleviate or help improve the situation.
Absolutely. So if there's external stressors that can be controlled, what would that look like?
Well, very often, let's say, well, with the groups that I often work together with, one of the most important things are the families. I'm working with younger people, right? And also with my PhD with developmental disorders, I've been working with children that have diagnoses such as ADHD, which people are familiar with, or autism spectrum disorders, or even Tourette's with tics problems. And the first step is really trying to get the family on board with the whole program of how to help the individual child reduce the stressful situations or problems that are causing things that are difficult. It can be, you know, the dynamics in the family between the parents. It can be child-parent relationship issues. It can be, of course, other things like financial problems, and a wide host of other issues. Often the children are struggling at school. That becomes a stressful situation for them. Again, it's looking back at these really kind of mapping and finding out what are causing the pressure in the daily life.
Yeah. It sounds like that would be important for all of us, honestly, to take that inventory and, exactly. and really think about, where are the pressures or the stresses coming from? And are there stresses or pressures we can start to alleviate or minimize? And what would be, we could think about, what would be solutions towards moving in reducing those? That exactly. makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's what part of the background for this book too is my experiences as I described with these serious mental conditions and Dr. Love, who's the co-author, she has the same experience. She's coming from a doctor's perspective, a psychiatrist, so she's more involved with the medication and also of course therapy, but very much in the medication perspective of how to treat some of these stress disorders. And my background is a little, as a psychologist, more behavioral, looking at how to change thinking, thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and everyday, routines, essentially, to try to help and alleviate it. So we both have coming from it from two different perspectives, you could say. And we see that the stress is one of the common denominators of all problems and all difficulties. And when we're dealing with people that have even things such as addictions, and other kinds of these types of problems, we often the triggers and often some of the issues in the background of these people are stressful situations or even traumatic situations. So getting back and understanding that is part of the treatment process.
Yes, and I'm thinking you and I are probably a lot more in line. right out of graduate school, I ran the cognitive behavioral therapy program at Southeast Mental Health here in Wyoming, which is our neighboring state. And it was working with paranoid schizophrenics. So that was the work of the program, was really doing some of these modules where it was, how do we do very succinct anxiety reduction? Mm-hmm. And it looked exactly at that, looking at cognitive distortions or thinking errors, and then behaviorally things that we need to do in order to shift our sense of stress, which just exacerbates the symptoms.
Exactly. Well, as you were saying, that's a good example, because you think of anxiety too, that it's that fear of something, some stressor, something that may happen, right? That's activating, and it's activating the whole body and the whole system. And if that's continued for such a long time or for a long time, then the body starts to break down and it starts reacting, and you might have physical problems and somatic problems, right? Problems, of course, things like, stomach problems and headaches, and it might also result in things such as, not sleeping well. And of course, then that compounds the problem and makes things even more difficult. And then you have issues in terms of, if you're getting out of your routines, what's happening with your eating situation, and what are you eating, and are you exercising, and are you getting those fun experiences to get a break from the stress of what you're experiencing? So it disrupts quite a lot, the stress and the stressors, and just getting a hold of that and kind of getting a grip of it, which is the first point that we talk about in our book. Then you're starting that process of trying to take control over the situation that you're in.
So yeah, it sounds like that awareness is the key. That's the first step to even realize that you're in this situation. I found that it seems like we all start to acclimate to higher and higher levels of stress. And then it's just kind of operating, subconsciously, and we're having the physical manifestations of it and yet not doing anything to change our situation. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So the first step is like to take this inventory and to also just be aware, like, this is happening and it's really affecting me.
Yeah. Our first step is really just really getting, as we call it, the first step is getting a grip. And it is that trying to get an overview of all the stressors in your life, right? you know, mapping it out, trying to get it, get to see it, and then the process of trying to understand how you react to it and why you react the way you do, right? We're all, as individuals, we all come to these situations differently and we all react differently. So trying to understand why maybe we're very sensitive to certain maybe relationship issues. Maybe there's, as you would know, working as you do, you know, what is it in our past that maybe has kind of been the forerunner to why we're reacting or we're very sensitive or oversensitized or very sensitive anyway to certain, let's say, issues in a relationship, right? We're all different that way. But again, getting an awareness, which is the excellent word that you used, of, you know, the stressors, how we react to it is the first step, just trying to get a perspective on it and seeing it from really the outside, not always being in it and being in the nervousness or the stress, but then trying to see it from, let's say, a meta perspective or a metacognitive perspective on from the outside.
That's so wonderful. Yes, I think that, you know, I've found with my clients as well, also being a transformational life coach, that's one of the tips that I use often is this mnemonic device, which is naming is taming. So that if we name the emotion, you know, all of a sudden we've kind of taken, like in this case, the stress or anxiety. And instead of just like, as you just described so perfectly, like being in it, we're so immersed in it that we don't even know what's happening to us. It's like taking it out of us and identifying it. It all of a sudden becomes like, oh, I'm experiencing anxiety. It's not just about I'm an anxious person. Mm-hmm. So to have that one degree of separation can be incredibly empowering. And then, oh, if it's here, I can do something about it. I don't have to define myself as it.
Exactly. And that's one of the beauties of being in humans is that we're able to put these ideas in words and either maybe writing it down, like you said, naming it is taming it, right? You put it on a word, you could write it down, you could look at it from another perspective. It's a way of trying to get some control over it and then getting it, as you say, just a little removed from the intensity that's inside your brain, to put it that way.
Yeah, such a great strategy for doing that. So when we come back, I'm excited to start talking about, you know, we're starting to understand a little bit about how stress can affect our lives, affect, you know, our behavior, obviously, you know, can start affecting relationships and work. And so moving in, you know, one of the things I really want to talk to you about is, you know, as a globe, you know, a global society, we have been going through chronic stress with COVID and, you know, with so much fear and so much loss and, you know, just really, you know, so much unknown that our brain that loves to thrive on predictability has all of a sudden gotten thrown into, we don't know what tomorrow is going to look like, you know? And I remember at one point, just thinking like, wow, what's next? It seemed like we had just kind of worldwide thing after thing happening, and definitely a lot of things happening here in America in the last year. So when we come back, we'll be continuing our conversation with Dr. Chel Torre-Hovick and discussing his amazing book. If you would hold that up, When Crisis Strikes.
All right, there it is.
Hey, there it is. 5 Steps to Heal Your Brain, Body, and Life. Thank you so much.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off. You're killing it in the mom game. But did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to the Boss Up Babe radio show, where Carissa Adkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive. Every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365DailyHustle.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Spark. So great to have you with us. Thank you, listening audience. Just sending out lots of love to you and just so much gratitude for joining us on this special episode with Dr. Hovick. So Dr. Hovick, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how this pandemic has affected us. You know, this is this time that's just unprecedented in our world, where globally, as a global community, it's all of humanity has experienced this stress, and now it's become chronic for over a year of unpredictability, crisis, loss. What are the effects that you're hearing about? Or, you know, tell me a little bit about your experience with COVID and this chronic stress and its effects on humanity.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's been, a lot of people are struggling, as we read about, and I'm teaching at the local university. A lot of the students are struggling. They don't have, contact with their friends, with their teachers. They're much, much more isolated. It puts a lot more pressure on self-discipline and kind of inventing new routines that are going to keep you going in a good way, right? So there, and of course, many, many families, people out of jobs, losing their jobs, and families with sick members. And so there's a lot of people struggling. In my practice at the hospital, and interestingly enough, many of the patients, some are doing much worse because they have anxiety issues, and this is increasing their anxiety, situation. They don't dare go out. Whereas some, they actually prefer to be inside and isolate as well. So they're just fine with the situation because they don't have to deal with going to the market or going to the mall or trying to do all those things that we've been working with them for years to try to learn to do, right? To get out and more social and more active and doing their physical exercises. So it's going to be a lot of work, when we get through this whole pandemic situation, trying to, train them up again to be active and to get out and to do all the things that maybe they're trying to avoid because they're really just worried about what could happen if they get out or if they're going out. So, I think to relate it to what I write about in the book is that what do we do with this? It's just all the symptoms, all the problems that you were describing about this not being foreseeable and unsure and how are things going to be and how is the future going to be? One of the principles that we usually kind of emphasize is this idea of really what do you have control over. And what don't you have control over, right? Really becoming aware of that, because we often are very much worrying about many, many things that we really can't do anything about, right? But it's often comforting and better and stress reducing to then focus on the things that you have control over, that you can do something about, right? And in the book, we talk about really just if people are just completely not able to function because of some crisis situation, similar to what happens in trauma situations, then we're really going down to the basics of what are the basic routines that need to be in place that you can focus on and you can try to have control over or get help to have control over, like your eating routines, when you're eating your meals, things like that. Your sleep schedules, working on that. Again, if you're having problems, get help to get that in order. Exercise, these kinds of things, and how can you do them in a different way than if you're not able to go to the gym or go to these places that you're used to or in the mountains. We like to be outdoors here in Norway. And we like to go like on the ski jump. We walk up the stairs, for example, here in Lillehammer. But of course, we can't be that many people there. So then we have to think of other ways of exercising. But these things are important. And not least of all, the social way of communicating, which is so important. And also being able to have fun and laugh and be silly. And these things that kind of are kind of ways of just grounding stressful situations and giving yourself a break. So part of that second step is exactly that. What can you control? What can't you control? And with the things that you can't control, what can you do about those? First understand them, see them and then work on just, you know, letting them be as they are and not stressing over them or worrying about them and you know, spending too much time on them and spending more time on the things that you can't control.
Oh, that's so awesome. You know, it's that whole message of like the point of power is in the present moment. And if we're worrying about the what ifs and what could happen and or we're, you know, fretting about the past, we're losing all of our power. We are not empowered. And so to use, you know, this present moment to do exactly what you're talking about, to start saying, well, what are some of the things I can do? You know, and really using, you know, creativity, which we're having to do, like you said, we're having to think outside of the box right now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, doing something, you know, I often tell my clients as well, you know, let's just come in and let's reel ourselves into just this 24 hours. And it's exactly for that reason that you're saying, what do we have control over in this 24 hours? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what can I create? Who can I connect to, and how do I take care of myself?
It's really very much in that idea, that vein of mindfulness as well, right? Being present in the moment, being aware of what's going on around you, right? Taking in things that are beautiful in nature, or things that that are beautiful in relationships, that are, you know, whatever is close at hand, right? What are the positive things, and being more aware of that, and not always thinking in the future or in the past, right? But getting that presence of mind to be in the moment and to really just, you know, soak it in. And if you can do, as we do also in meditative, you know, some people use also meditations as trying to get as many senses involved as possible, right? What, not only what you can see, we're a very visual society, modern society is very visual, but all these things of what can you hear, right? What are the sounds? What are the smells? What's the feeling? What's the tactile sense? All these things that one also uses in meditation to get you into the here and now, which is a calming for your whole, for your brain and for your body.
And thank you so much for running through that, because I think people think that it's got to be really difficult. And oftentimes, you know, make it difficult. It's actually as simple as bringing your awareness into your body at this moment, and exactly that, plugging into your five senses, which as you're going through those, your brain can't be multitasking. I mean, it will literally start dropping down. Your breath starts to slow down, your heart rate starts to slow, your blood pressure comes down. Mm. And with that, right, your stress and anxiety.
Mm. And we all have different techniques, and right, like somehow, you know, there's mindfulness techniques or meditation techniques, or one technique that I've just been doing, which is maybe a little strange, but I'll take photographs of nature. If I'm walking or if I'm, you know, driving to work, I'll maybe stop and just being there in the moment, saying that is just an amazing sunset or a sunrise, or even just a cloud formation or a tree or a garden, you know, fixture or whatever. And then just trying to spend time just to really enjoy that visual sensation. Just as an example of things that you can do wherever you are and wherever, you know, whatever you have at hand, you can just try to be more aware of that presence of mind right there at the moment.
Ah, it's brilliant. Yes. Love that. Love that so much. You know, I have to share with you one of my morning practices as I go outside my backyard. I always have to let I have this beautiful standard poodle, Jules, that I take outside in the morning, but it's my morning practice to stand outside with my feet on the ground, feeling the grass. Sometimes I'm feeling the snow, no matter what the weather is, I go outside. But just like soak in the sky and just really, I'm present to the birds and the trees and the sounds. And it's just such an amazing way to ground and start the day. So not only can we do things when we notice we're stressed, you know, I think too, it sounds like one of the important things we can also, it's like doing some kind of priming ourselves for the day. So maybe we have a little more resiliency. And doing these beautiful pictures that you're talking about. I love nature and I love pictures. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so true. When you take those moments just to soak it in.
And if you, you know, we probably do this when you're out with Jules and in your backyard there with, you know, if you're stressed, you can also do simple things like, you know, becoming aware of your breathing, right? Taking deep breaths that's immediately calming. When we teach this to people that are even having, for example, serious panic attacks, anxiety attacks, then the first thing, the go-to thing they need to do is to go to their breathing, right? Because they often, if they're aware of it, they'll notice that they're breathing really, really quickly, right? And becoming very nervous. So getting that, you know, long, deep breath in and then a long breath out and doing some breathing techniques can be a very effective way also to kind of get control over your body, get it calmed down, help you get control over your thoughts, and then bring your thoughts to those positive images or those positive sounds or those of the birds chirping or of the river running or the creek running, or all these senses that can kind of really also fill your brain with something positive and soothing and comforting.
Excellent. So what is the third step? So the first step is having some awareness, and then that this is happening, and maybe take an inventory where we're being affected by it. The second step being look at what we can control and what we can do. What's the third step?
Well, the third step, we call that, we call it push into motion, okay? And we use helpful mnemonic. We use the hand as these five steps, as the steps in our five-step our program. So get a grip is the thumb, it's the first one. And the second step is pinpointing, right? We're pinpointing what we can control, what we can't control. And the idea in the third step is to try to set into motion the change that we want to do based on what we've been through in step one and step two, right? So if there are these changes, and of course we need inner motivation because to change routines, for example, to change routines, eating routines, meal routines, sleep routines, positive things in our life. It we all know that we should be doing this and that and the other thing, but how do we do it, right? Okay, so we do have some techniques that we talk about in the book where you can again, writing down the positive and negatives if there's alternatives, and trying to kind of get an idea about what is it that you feel is going to be the way forward to help you kind of balance your daily life, right? Because it's not a matter of doing something once. It's a matter of putting something in on a regular basis. That's really what's going to change our situation, right? This the same thing if you think even about diet, right? It doesn't matter that you don't eat something at one time. That doesn't really matter. It's what's happening on a daily basis over a long period of time. So in the first two steps, and especially number two, when you're talking about what you can get control or gain control over, then in the step three, push into motion, we're going to start working on putting those into our daily life routines. And then there's also a way of working to try to start with the easier ones, right? Depending on what, if you're just completely flat out, just really having a breakfast routine might be, enough. That might be a lifting a mountain, just getting that in order. But then you can then have a kind of an overview of the other things that you need to get to do. If it's, for example, if there's an issue that you have a conflict, a relationship conflict, and maybe there's something you can do about it. What is it that you can do? Put that into motion. If there's something you don't have control over, something you can't do, how can you get help with that, right? So it's just really putting out all the details of these stressors and how to do something about it, and then start working on it, okay?
And by writing it down, it's like you have that resource right there.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little different. It's not what many people think when I kind of explain it, maybe it's like a list. It's not a list because we've thought through these areas that, and we've separated them into things that we have control over, that we don't have control over, and how we can get help maybe with the things we don't have control over. So we don't have to worry about it because that's going to be solved in this way. Right. but it's then starting the process of the simpler tasks to begin with, to build up confidence, to then move on to the more complex or difficult ones.
Yeah. And I guess I was thinking of, you know, so often with my clients having like a safety plan. If someone's, you know, really struggling, we come up with a safety plan. And one of the things we do is to have it written down so you can reference back when you get stressed. We know one of the first things to go is short-term memory. And so being able to say, okay, when I thought through all of this on step three, what I became aware of is I do need help in this area. And the person I need help from is my Aunt May. So I'm going to, you know, make sure that, you know, she's such a nurturer. I want to make sure that I am in contact with her. Am I following that right?
Exactly. Exactly. And you said, and you brought up that good indication too. If you're starting to not remember things short term, right? Then it's kind of an indication that there is you're pretty stressed, right? I think we all experience that too. If we're working towards a deadline, all the kind of the small simple things are our brains are just full of other things or other ideas. So we need to kind of get control over that so that we can kind of free up brain resources to spend energy on more effective ways, right? Not just activating and being worried and thinking about, you know, catastrophe or difficult situations, difficult consequences.
Right. Yes. Oh my gosh. There's so much here. I can't wait to come back from break. There's so many wonderful techniques and just such important information. Thank you so much, Dr. Hovick, for being here. And we're going to be back after this break with more information from Dr. Hovick. And we're talking about his book, When Crisis Strikes, 5 Steps to Heal Your Brain, Body, and Life from Chronic Stress. Thank you for holding that up. And please, listeners, subscribe to the show at transformationtalkradio.com, The Spark with Stephanie James, so that you don't miss an episode. We have so many amazing guests, just like Dr. Hovick here, who really can help us change our lives and can help you to live your best life. So we'll be back with more amazing tips and information right after the break.
Do you consider yourself to be a misfit, rebel, or troublemaker, or a round peg in a square hole that just doesn't seem to fit in? You are not alone. Join me, Dr. Brooke Sheehan, on the Body Talks podcast, where I help the ones who see things differently find what they need to thrive in order to change the world. Tune in live every second and fourth Tuesday at 5 a.m. only on transformationtalkradio.com.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
And we are back. Welcome back, listeners. I am here with Dr. Kel Torre-Hovick, a neuropsychologist with a PhD in developmental psychology. And we are talking about his book, When Crisis Strikes, 5 Steps to Heal Your Brain, Body, and Life from Chronic Stress. And Lord knows we have all dealt with some chronic stress in this past year. So we've been learning these different steps. If you'll just run through the first three that we just talked about. So if we have any new listeners that they're able to keep up as we move into the fourth and fifth step.
Right. The first one, which is the thumb, we call that getting a grip. That's gaining a grip. And the idea there is to really map that all the stressors and the stressful situations, stressful elements in one's life, get an idea of what that is, how you know, you react to it, and maybe why you react the way that you do, right? Maybe thinking about the past and thinking about ways that you've had an experience that's made you very sensitive to certain types of stress, for example, maybe in relationships. So that's the first one, is to get an idea of all the stressors in one's life. Then the second one is pinpointing, is number two. And that has to do with looking at these stressful situations, thinking of what is it that you can do about it And what is it that you can't do? So what do you have control over? What don't you have control over? And maybe starting with what you don't have control over, and then thinking, well, how can you get help with that if you need it, so that you get it out of your brain and out of your worrying on a daily basis, and then being able to then focus on the things that you do have control over. And those are often things that are very close, that can have everything, might have to do with meal routines, what you're eating, sleep routines, of course, and these daily routines in one's life that one usually does have some control over, right? But things like maybe economic problems, that's maybe something you're going to have help with. So it's not something that you can't deal with on your own. So it's really getting an idea of how to go about, resolving some of these stressors. And then, of course, the third one is push into motion, which is, it's not enough just to get an idea about what you can do in your daily lives, what you can change in your daily lives, but it's then how am I able to do it, to get started on it and to make it a part of my daily routines. So there's techniques on how to first identify if you're unsure about, should I do this or should I do that, identifying the right way forward, and then gaining the inner motivation to put these things in practice and then help continue it over a period of time. That's that third step.
Well, and so I'm really curious, what's the next? What is our fourth step?
The fourth step is the ring finger. The fourth step is essentially, we can say, we call it pull back. Okay. And this is the step where you really are working on taking care of yourself. Okay. And it's really an important step. And the example I often give is that, because I've of course been traveling back and forth since I was a kid from California to Norway. And very often, if you're traveling over water, they'll have this procedure at the beginning. The stewards and the pursers will then talk about if there's an emergency, there's a little mask that comes down with the air. So I write about this in the book. Well, the thing is that what they always say is it's important that you put that mask on yourself first before you start helping other people, right? And the idea there is that unless you're taking care of yourself and you have a good situation, it's going to be more difficult for you to then help others. So this is kind of a step to making that space. If you think about maybe the classic thing is our parents sometimes, where they're just doing everything for their kids. They're doing everything at work. Maybe they're doing everything for their partner and they have no time for themselves. That's stressful, right? And if you're totally stressed out, then what is it that you're actually doing for all of these relationships, right? And it's maybe not the best way of helping them, in their situation, even though it seems like you're helping them because you're spending lots of time. So that's kind of the essence of that step four, is how do we pull back? How do we make sure that, we're doing things for ourselves and we're, are taking care of ourselves.
Beautiful. I that is such an essential message. And I have always loved that analogy of, when the air mask comes down, that, that's exactly what they say. In case of emergency, put your own mask on first, and then you can assist other people. And that's really, I have found that to be so true in my life and the lives of my clients, that when they actually stop and allow themselves that self-care to be priority in their own lives, it doesn't mean that other things aren't a priority. It just means that they have a commitment to taking care of themselves. It changes the whole game. And all of a sudden they do have more resiliency. They have more bandwidth in which to deal with life and its complexities.
Exactly. So it's an important step that I think we've got a lot of people resonated to that and think that this is so important. But then there's this idea of having, feeling bad that, I shouldn't be doing that. I shouldn't be thinking about myself, that somehow that not taking care of yourself is egoistic. I mean, we're not talking about an egoism, right? We're talking about what's necessary to be able to be a person that has the resources and the resiliency and the heart to be able to help in a very good way, right? And you're helping in a good way if you're balanced.
Yes. Yes. And then you're not
stressed, then you're often more anxious, you're more angry, you're more upset, you're more emotional. All these issues then come out in that sense. And it can be a negative thing on relationships as well. More pressure, more stress for others.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I was just thinking. I mean, it's absolutely one of those things where when you do take care of yourself, then wow, don't you show up differently in all of those relationships? So let's talk about the fifth step. I want to make sure we fit it in before we run out of time.
Right. So the fifth step, you know, we often, when Dr. Love and I were researching this and we were talking about the hand, we were thinking about, we had this idea about, you know, looking into, if you were to cut off one of your fingers, which one would it be? that's a horrible thought, but you know, many people will say then the little finger, because maybe that's not the one that's used the most, but it turns out that the little finger is really one of the key fingers for grip strength, to give you strength, right? It doubles it. If you don't have your little finger, you have half of the strength in your hand. So it's a very, very critical part of our whole five-step program. And what we call it, it's called hold on and let go. There's a lot of exercises in this fifth step that have to do with understanding your strengths and your weaknesses. For example, your personality strengths and weaknesses. Are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? And then going through these personality traits, and maybe for some they've been so busy in their adult lives that they've lost some of the qualities that they had when they were younger, right? So here's an opportunity to find back to those qualities or those personality traits that helped you, that might help you in the situation or in the crisis that you're in, right? If it has to do with maybe becoming more social, right? Reaching out, maybe that's something, because you need to get some more help. That's a quality that you can bring out and emphasize. And maybe there's some of these personality qualities that aren't helpful in the crisis situation that you're in, and that you might want to then let those go, or at least play them down a bit, right? And emphasize others. Okay. So both these issues of personality, the way we are, if you think of them in that way, but also in terms of what I, since I'm a neuropsychologist, I have to have something with cognitive things to do. So, you know, this idea of being impulsive, right, is a cognitive trait, or being kind of maybe overly careful, or like a balance, right?
Yeah.
Or one can be maybe a little rigid and not very flexible, or very maybe all too flexible, right?
Yeah.
There's also other traits. I mean, there's thousands of these different traits, like being creative, being curious, being, you know, things of this nature that are very kind of intellectual style traits, that we might call them that, and putting a name on it and saying, okay, this is something that my friends would say that I have this quality. This is a quality in me. And then the question of, is it something that I can use in my situation to kind of maybe to bring it out, to help me in my situation? Or is it something that I need to tone down because it's actually just making the crisis more difficult, right? For example, this issue of impulsivity, right? And becoming more aware of it. Maybe if impulsivity is actually causing more problems, maybe that's something one can tone down. And maybe one can then kind of do something more on the personality scale of more extroversion, more social, more positive experiences in that way. So it's really an inventory of the strengths and weaknesses in yourself, then to be able to kind of understand that, okay, this is something that I need to kind of bring and strengthen and have at the fore of my everyday work on trying to reduce my stressful situation. And what is it that I need to kind of tone down and have a little less of?
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. So these really do all build on one another, it sounds like. You know, like you said, like it's like this perfect analogy with the hand, that we need each one of these fingers to really, like you said, have an adequate grip.
Right. And I feel that we often, some people will say, well, oh, I can use that one and pick and choose, and that's fine. But I found that it's very important that one works through all five of the steps, really, because it has to do with what we're talking about is kind of behavior change, emotional change, changes to our everyday. And that takes time. And it's good to get that into a system that follows one thing after another. Like you said, that they're intertwined. They work and build on each other. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it more automatic, these behaviors and these feelings and these thoughts and the reduced stress, make it more automatic so we don't need to spend so much energy thinking about what should we do now? Oh, should I do this? Do I have, you know, it's making it a part of our everyday lives that will then help if you spend time working through the steps and the sequence they are.
Well, it sounds like it's like building a muscle, you know, and so it's like we practice and we practice and we practice, and it's rote memory. It's like when we had to learn to tie our shoes, when we were first learning how to tie our shoes as little kids, that was such a tedious task and could be so frustrating. We had to really concentrate and do each one of the steps with so much intention. And now we do it, you know, absolutely subconsciously, automatically. There's no consciousness. And so it sounds like this is very much in line with that. As we practice these strategies and these steps, pretty soon they just become assimilated. They're a part of who we are. They're so much easier to access and utilize. And absolutely sounds like they can help transform and change our lives.
Exactly. And then, and as we say, from a brain perspective, you're moving these routines or these ways of responding back into the automatic parts that are automatically generating thoughts, generating activity, generating feelings, and freeing up space for the prefrontal area, which is it's just that decision making, that assessment, that, you know, and using that then to be able to spend time on the things that are important, right? The things that need energy, because if you're the whole time dealing with, you know, dramatic, stressful things and using your frontal part of your brain to do that, then you're just going to be in a stress situation. It's just going to compound the difficult situation. So we're trying to get, you know, the good routines and that good taking care of oneself and all these aspects into the automatic part of our brains and those routines, and then freeing up space so we could spend time, you know, with our partner or with our child or with, you know, the work that we're doing, it, you know, having open, freeing up that flexible prefrontal part of our brain that needs, that takes a lot of energy, but it can't be filled with all kinds of stressful stuff. Okay.
Right. Right. So many amazing tips, tips is even the right word. I mean, just knowledge and information. And thank you so much for sharing this wisdom with us, Dr. Kovic. I mean, this is the stuff that we all need to hear and we all need to learn. So if you would please just hold up the book one more time, so the people that are watching this on YouTube can see When Crisis Strikes, 5 Steps to Heal Your Brain, Body, and Life from Chronic Stress. This could not be a more timely book. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. And if you were to leave the audience right now, Dr. Kovic, with an essential message you want to make sure that they get, what would that be?
Well, I mean, I would say, I think the globe is really struggling with this whole COVID situation. It's just very traumatic. And it's this idea, well, what is it going to be like afterwards? And I think that's something definitely we don't have control over. So I think that, again, having focus on the close issues that one does have control over, in your family, in your everyday lives, in your work, having focus on that, doing as, you know, the best, making the best of it, and taking care of yourself during that process is probably the best way that we're all going to get through it, no matter what situation we're in.
Great, great words of wisdom. And where can people find your book, and where can they find out more information about you?
Well, the book's available on Amazon.com. It's on Barnes & Noble. We have a website, Dr. Love and I. It's called www.lovehovic.com.
And Hovic is H-O-V-I-K.
Exactly.
Yeah. So lovehovic.com.
Exactly. So there's information there about both of us and what we're working on and our backgrounds and things that we're trying to do in promoting the book. And you can also get in touch with us via that website as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Kovic, for being here with me and with our listening audience. Just lots of deep gratitude.
Great. Thanks for your excellent questions, Stephanie. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you. So thank you, listeners. Again, just sending out lots of love and warmest wishes to all of you out there. And just thank you for tuning into The Spark, igniting your best life. I'm Stephanie James.
Thanks for tuning in to The Spark with Stephanie James. Remember that you already have what you need to live a life that is fully lit and fully alive. You're already holding the flame. Now it's time to ignite your best life. Learn more at stephaniejames.world. That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.